Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Lama Thantrapa with the Secrets of Qigong Masters, the radio talk show sponsored by Academy of Qidao, the first and only school offering professional training in Qigong coaching. Today, I'm honored to interview Dr. Roger Yonke, who began his practice in Tai Chi and Qigong a long time ago, 1967. He has been to China 8 times to research qi cultivation and vitality enhancement in hospitals, universities, temples, and sacred mountain sites. He has lectured internationally and is the author of 2 best-selling books on Tai Chi, Qigong, and self-healing. The Healer Within by Harper Collins was published in 1997, and The Healing Promise of Qi, published by McGraw-Hill in 2002. Dr. Yonke commenced his activity in the field of health promotion, disease management, and corporate wellness and benefits assessment and productivity enhancement in 1978 when he developed a series of retreats targeted at elders and executives. In 1980, he moved his clinical Chinese medicine and wellness consultation practice to Santa Barbara, California. In 1983, he co-founded Health Action, which is a clinic as well as a training, consulting, and strategic planning organization. Its purpose is to assist hospitals, agencies, communities, corporations, schools, and other organizations to focus on health improvement and community empowerment. A primary program, which was developed and refined over 25 years, is the Health Action Wellness Coaching Program using the Circle of Life coaching system. In 2000, Dr. Yonke founded the Institute of Integral Qigong in Tai Chi, which has trained 300 mind-body practice teachers and over 500 Tai Chi practice leaders. Several years later, he established Healer Within Foundation to bring the benefits of mind-body practice and wellness coaching to populations that are otherwise unable to afford the benefits. Qigong is a store, his institute is a storehouse of ancient wisdom for contemporary times, from healing to health to longevity to immortality. You can find out more about his work at the following site, www.taichieasy.org, feelthechi.com, and the Institute of Integral Tai Chi and, Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi.org, all spelled out as it sounds, Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi. Welcome to our radio talk show, Dr. Yonke. I'm so thrilled to be able to interview you tonight.
Oh, thank you. I'm really appreciating it and looking forward to it. Thanks so much.
Great. Well, I am excited to find out more about your personal opinions about what the field of Qigong and energy healing and energy art is from your point of view. So would you share with our listeners what you perceive as Qigong?
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, I just want to mention to people, if they're looking at the blog talk site, that down there at the below the description that you just read are some links straight through to those websites. So if you want to peruse those websites while we're talking, that can be fun to do sometimes. So Qigong is, Qigong is the words or the sounds of the Chinese language that come out, Qi and Gong, are really very, very recently used to describe the huge body of information and practice that goes all the way back into shamanic prehistory and over time have been known as Dao Yin and Yang Sheng. Dao Yin meaning guiding and leading of Qi, and Yang Sheng meaning nourishing life and basically enhancing vitality. And my own personal definition of Qigong is the process of getting into a state wherein an individual determines on purpose with intent to disassociate from the complexities of the past and the future and focus on the present with great intentfulness. That can be done either in a state of pure quiescence, meaning in stillness, or that can be done in a state of movement. And so Qigong can be done either moving or sitting or standing still. And Qigong and Tai Chi over the periods of history have been used for both health maximization as a kind of wellness and vitality enhancement, as well as in the Taoist and Buddhist contexts as personal rituals for associating with the with one's transcendental nature. And I love those definitions. And then Tai Chi. Tai Chi is interesting because Tai Chi means basically the state of the universe in the moments that have followed the Big Bang, what physicists call the Big Bang. The Tai Chi, if you think about that circle with the black and the white in it, the yin-yang, sometimes called the yin-yang symbol, that's actually, in Chinese, that's named the map of Tai Chi. And so Tai Chi is really a map of a natural cosmic phenomena. Many, 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 many thousands and thousands of years after that, well, millions of years after the natural cosmic Tai Chi occurred, a few people got together and decided to call a certain type of Qigong Tai Chi, named after this cosmic phenomena.
So I like to think of Chuan.
Otherwise known as Tai Chi Chuan. Yes, sir.
Right. Great. I also would like to ask you, if you don't mind, when we're talking about Qigong, does that include Tai Chi, or do you perceive Tai Chi as a separate discipline from Qigong?
My personal opinion, and by the way, everything that I'll say here today is a personal opinion, of course, and then you know, when we think about where is the source of truth, it almost sounds ridiculous that we would ever get the truth from another person. So anybody who you ever ask these questions to can only be really giving opinions, and my personal opinion, Tai Chi Chuan. And Tai Chi Chuan means Tai Chi as it is interpreted as a boxing or kung fu art.
Great. And I understand that you are proficient in both the Tai Chi Chuan as well as Qi Gong. How did you get involved with these disciplines?
Well, I'm originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, and in 1967, I had an opportunity to leave home for the first time, and with a friend of mine, and we went to California, and I lived in Berkeley, California, and one of the things that happened as a natural, spontaneous event is that I bumped into a Tai Chi class that was being run by a student at UC Berkeley from China who was in the engineering department. And basically I studied Tai Chi for a summer there, and it was right after having read the Tao Te Ching as a part of my university experience. And it was just thrilling. And I always wanted to be a doctor, and I was in pre-medical school for a while, and then I stopped that, and I decided that I would become a Chinese doctor at that point. So Tao Te Ching, Tai Chi, then a move to Hawaii to study Chinese medicine, at which point I was exposed to Qigong by one of the most interesting Qigong teachers alive in the world today, Chang Yi Xiang, who lives in Hawaii.
We'll need to arrange so that you will appear as a guest on our show as well.
Good day.
Fantastic. And what brought you to these arts? What was your inspiration or motivation to study Qigong?
Yeah. Well, the inspiration I should start with the inspiration to study Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine, when I was studying conventional medicine in pre-medical school, the idea, the basic paradigm for that medicine is to study pathology and to study disease. And I was really interested in studying health and health maximization. And so I got kind of depressed. It was the 60s, and, it was obviously time for a change. And so I dropped out of medical school, and I began to, as I was saying moments ago, pursue Chinese medicine, which is a medical system that's based on studying well-being and well-being maximization. So acupuncture, herbal medicine, Chinese physical therapy, these are all modalities that cure disease by maximizing function. And then the fourth part, so if you say acupuncture, herbal medicine, Chinese physical therapy, that's the three clinical aspects of Chinese medicine. And then Qigong is the wellness system. And so when I began to study at the school, interesting, very briefly about the school that I studied Chinese medicine in Hawaii called Tai Xuan School, T-A-I-X-U-A-N. Tai is in Tai Chi, means immense. Xuan, X-U-A-N, means mystery. So that's the Tai Xuan School, means the immense mystery school. Beautiful, beautiful experience. And the focus in the Tai Xuan School of Chinese Medicine was Qigong. And so I was immediately exposed to Qigong as the baseline, as the grandmother of everything else that happens in Chinese medicine. And so I was basically pulled along in being exposed to Qigong by just the natural events, by the Tao, I suppose, pulled along by my own destiny into this experience. And let me just say one more thing about that is that when I was meeting with the headmaster of the Tai Xuan School, the headmaster of this particular school is a she, who is from the family that is originally what they call in China the heavenly masters, which is a whole kind of Taoism. Chang Yishang said to me, she looked at me right in the eyes and she said, I know that you're going to be a great doctor of Chinese medicine, but I'm telling you that your destiny is in Qigong. And I don't know if she basically put a spell on me at that time or whether she was reading my facial structure or doing kind of like a psychic reading or something like that. But the history basically is that I practiced Chinese medicine clinically for 30 years, but about 10 years ago, I stopped doing clinical medicine, and I basically went 100% into Qigong and Tai Chi, which is the work that I do completely today.
Well, I definitely concur that Qigong has to be perceived as the foundational aspect of the Oriental medicine in general, and it's a pity that it is not taught in the majority of schools of acupuncture as much as it was taught at the school that you attended in Hawaii.
Oh, it's a tragedy. In fact, last week I gave a lecture at the annual Pacific Conference of Oriental Medicine, and basically the topic of my lecture was that the Chinese medical community is actually neglecting its natural heritage as the most eloquent system of wellness-based medicine that has ever existed in the history of the human race. And so many of the doctors of Oriental medicine are basically, you know, they're doing Chinese medicine, but they're actually doing it in the Western context. You know, they're dealing with people who are sick. They're responding to the fact that people say, you know, look, I'm sick, you're the doctor, you fix me. The whole concept of teaching people about how to be more connected to their essential nature is really not even happening in the hands of many, many doctors of Oriental medicine, and it's tragic.
Absolutely. And so that was, I understand, your motivation to shift from being a Chinese doctor to a Qigong teacher, the trainer of Qigong teachers.
Correct, correct. In other words, instead of seeing one patient at a time who is basically complaining about their health and expecting that the doctor will fix them, I'm now in the profession of training people to be Qigong and Tai Chi teachers, and then they're going back to their communities and leading classes of, you know, 10 people, 30 people, and so the magnitude of empowerment that I get to be involved in my role as a trainer of Qigong and Tai Chi teachers is just immense compared to the magnitude of the kind of numbers of people that I was able to help as a doctor of Chinese medicine.
No doubt. Well, I wonder if you can share with our listeners, what is it that you perceive as the main reason, or I would say the main motivation, maybe even the main pain that brings people to Qigong? What is it that they really want to accomplish or perhaps heal or deal with?
I understand the question. There's actually a couple of motivations. My favorite motivation is that there's a subset of people in the world who are oriented to the fact that they are naturally a powerful being. And people who understand the natural presence of inherent power are often inclined to want to be able to understand that natural power and, in fact, cultivate and enhance that natural power. You know, why not? So those people, I wouldn't say they're all of the people who are out there who are interested in Qigong and Tai Chi, but there are a fair number of people who are actually oriented to their natural destiny as a person who can channel the energy of the universe. And so those are the people who come to Qigong and Tai Chi in a proactive sort of way. In other words, they don't do it because they're sick, because they lost their health. They do it because they want to retain their well-being. And, of course, those are my favorite kinds of students because they're very, very enthusiastic. They're usually kind of like mission-driven. In other words, they want to learn more about Qigong and Tai Chi, and they want to share it with everybody. And these are the kinds of people who I have as the trainees in our training courses. And, you know, sometimes people say to me, can I be your student? And what I say is, I'm not looking for students. I'm looking for colleagues. I'm on a quest to be able to pan for gold and find the people in the world, not just in the United States, because we have people in our training programs from all over the world. So I'm panning for gold. I'm looking for people who want to inspire others and be a part of the solution. The other population of people who seek Qigong and Tai Chi are the people who are basically they're overwhelmed. Sometimes it's just an absolutely overwhelming, stressful life that person might be leading. Or they may even be in a worse situation where it's not just stress, but it's actually some kind of loss of health, some sort of pathology, everything from cancer to heart disease to numerous forms of asthma and all kinds of neurological disorders. These are the people who've lost their health and want to try to get it back. And so the question that you ask is, what is the main pain that drives people to Qigong and Tai Chi? And I would say that overall, if it's a pain that's driving them, because as I said earlier, there are many people who go to Qigong and Tai Chi out of a kind of, well, it's almost like bliss or inspiration. But those who are feeling pain, it's usually because of disease and literal body pain, and in many cases, severe chronic disease, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, neurological disease, etc.
Right. By the way, I see that we have over 25, actually 27 callers who are calling in right now. If you guys are interested in asking any questions, please feel free to raise your hand using your dial pad on the phone, and feel free to ask a question and contribute to our show. You also, if you're listening to our show and would like to ask a question or would like to be able to find out some particular details about the ways that Qigong can be helpful for you personally, feel free to call us in. You can reach us by calling 347-327-9635. Once again, we're listening to the interview with Dr. Roger Yonke. Roger, would you share with our listeners a little bit about the benefits that people can receive from the study of Qigong, in particular, your system that you offer in your school or organization?
Sure, thank you. traditionally, the human being is perceived in Chinese medicine and Chinese philosophy as a holistic being. And so that's a body, a consciousness, and then a transcendental aspect known simply as, easy way to say it, is as a spirit. So we're talking body, mind, and spirit here. So I would say that these are the benefits that are available through all forms of Qigong, and here's why. I'm an advocate of the forms of Qigong and Tai Chi that we utilize in our own training context. However, I'm a believer in the fact that all forms of Qigong and Tai Chi have marvelous capacity to maximize an individual at the level of body, mind, and spirit. And so it's not about the technique or the method or the system or the master. It's about the person who's doing the practice. And the question you could ask is, are you practicing in a state of intent? Are you practicing in a state of focused intent? And so for those individuals who are practicing in a state of focused intent, and using the methodologies as a focus to be able to maximize the function of the body, then that's going to happen. And that can happen through any number of different approaches to Qigong. We break the Qigong down into four parts: body practice, breath practice, mind focus, and self-applied massage. And to enhance the function of the body, in other words, to produce the elixir the natural medicine within the human body, the elixir is what the Chinese call this. To produce the body-based elixir, there's an approach to Qigong for doing that, and basically it has a lot to do with movement, it has a lot to do with massage, and it has a lot to do with breath practice. Then for the personality and for the emotions and for the character, for the aspect of the person that is not the body but is not the transcendental spirit, call it the personality or the character, there's a whole array of Qigong practices, but more than that, it's a way of approaching Qigong that has to do with especially focusing on the present moment, which liberates one from the complexities of the regrets of the past and the anxieties of the future. And then, of course, if the body practice and the consciousness practice are done in a context of great intent and focus, then there's a natural productivity of what the Chinese would call the spirit elixir. So all forms of Qigong done in the right state of body and mind will help to produce an elixir for the body and every aspect of the physiological self, an elixir for the consciousness and every aspect of the personality and character, as well as an opening to a direct association with what is called the elixir of the spirit. So that's how I would say it for today.
Let me ask you, what is it that you mean by great intention or intentionality? Since you mentioned several times that you talk about being present, well, how does that play out? I understand that intention has something to do with having a desire to achieve something or a certain expectation of something happening in the future.
Actually, I would use a little bit different definition of intent. Desire, okay, that's close. And, seeking an outcome in the future, and to a certain extent, that's also close. It's a little bit more like a goal, however. Intentionality, the Chinese call this means focused intent of the consciousness. And so the most important thing about intention is the capacity to decide. So if you're doing your Qigong practice and you realize that you're thinking about, how to sell something or how to buy something or how to convince someone to make a certain decision or if you're paying attention to, how somebody owes you an apology and so forth, well, then that's really not, by the best definition, Qigong. That's more like exercising while worrying. And what makes Qigong so powerful is this capacity to decide or elect or to use the intent to be able to hone and cultivate a focus. And so when a person is doing their practice of Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, meditation, mindfulness, any of those, and they are able to use their will and their discipline, and these are two real power words in the Chinese context, in the Qigong context, we like to think, oh, well, I'll just relax and then everything will improve. And that's a good step in the right direction, relaxing. And when you relax, in fact, many things do improve. However, being able to actually sustain a focus using the capacity to decide and to bring the will to bear on the process, so that when distraction arises, the focus is a bit, that the individual has the capacity to refocus. That's the essence of Qigong, and that's what is meant by EYI, or mind intent.
The ability to focus despite the distraction, isn't it what we call attention?
Yes, it is intention. Sure, go ahead.
I said, isn't that what we call attention? Like paying attention to something? Like being attentive?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So what you have is you have the capacity to pay attention, but then that which is driving that, I would call that intent.
Great. We have a caller who raised a hand from area code 505, and I would like to let that caller speak up. Hello, you are on the air. You go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. Hi, I am one of your colleagues in the field. My name is Maury. And I had a question. It's a little diversion from what you're talking about today, but it's relevant to energy medicine. I have someone who called me from out of state about doing some remote work on a breast cancer situation. Actually, it was a family member, so they were asking about it in general. And a question came up about if they have a malignant situation, and they were concerned based on some parallel type research that doing energy work pre-surgery may not be a good idea. And their parallel research was that some tests were done in the last 5 years, I guess, where they did chemo to people before the surgery, and it found that it affected the surgeon's ability to get a fine line perspective when he went in to do whatever cutting, and it was actually a negative thing. And I know when I do energy work on cancers or tumors, just the dynamics of its change in nature, energetically speaking, could potentially, I suppose, change someone's vision of it if they were to see it physically when they go to cut. And I'm just wondering if you've heard anything of that nature in regards to Qigong and whether it would be, given that insight, a positive thing or if there's something to be looked at further.
Yeah. Thank you, Maury, and wishing you well. 505, is that New Mexico?
Yeah, I'm in Santa Fe.
Yeah, wishing you well and glad to hear from you. So the response, which will be far from a completely satisfactory response because it's a very, very, very large question that you're asking, and we get into the question of medical Qigong therapeutics where the influence, where the Qi influence is being transmitted, shall we say. It's a big, big puzzle, and there's a lot of conflicting research out there. However, instead of talking to you from the perspective of research, which, by the way, I've done quite a bit of research in the area of Qigong as a personal cultivation practice, but have not participated directly in the research done on Qi transmission, although I read all of that research, what seems to be possible, and so this is like totally opinion. In other words, I'm not really coming at you from a textbook, and I'm not coming at it from research perspective. I'm coming at it from a pure personal opinion perspective, is that everything is energy, substance is congealed energy, energy that has concentrated, if you know what I mean. And so when those of us who are involved in Qigong become engaged in a process of, shall we say, cultivating the energy for and with another person, because of the nature of nature, it's very easy for, particularly from the perspective of a philosophical answer like I'm giving right now, for the substance of a being to begin to show greater external signs of a wave-like nature. And so if a surgeon is going into the human body looking for discrete physical evidence of the line between this set of cells and that set of cells, it's going to be distressing if they get there and they find that the edge, which should be a physical edge and a very discrete edge, is starting to show signs of not being discrete. And if healing is taking place, it's kind of like the difference between the skin when you cut, the open cut, and then the fibrinogen that fills in the cut, and then the tissue growing back, and then the scar. That whole process, that tissue is changing constantly from the moment of the cut all the way down to the point where it finally scars up and settles down. And so I'm not really answering your question. I'm just reflecting that I understand what it is that you're describing. And one of the most distressing things for us right now in healthcare is that we're, as a society, we're pretty addicted to a purely physiological / pathological version of healthcare. And with energy medicine, we're not talking physiological, we're talking trans-physiological. And we're typically not talking so much about pathology, we're talking about maximizing function and creating greater well-being. And so there's a clash of paradigms right now. And so when people from a conventional paradigm of physiological, pathological view start to bump up into experiences, what we would call energy medicine, that have to do with an energetic trans-physiological view, which is based on maximizing well-being rather than excising or killing pathology, it's distressing. And it's not only distressing emotionally, like, wow, I'm distressed, I can't figure this out, this is, I'm disoriented, I don't feel like I understand where I am right now. It's that kind of distressing, but it's actually literally distressing conceptually in terms of paradigms which are clashing and trying to converge. And so I'm going to leave it there for now. One last thing that I would say is that we have to, this is one of the reasons why I stopped treating people as an acupuncturist and why I do not do a lot of energy medicine type treatment, because I feel more comfortable with the idea that if a person has the capacity to heal themselves, I feel more comfortable actually having them do that. So that rather than getting in the business of fixing people using energy, so it's sort of like energy doctoring, classic part of my training, it's a skill that I have, but I feel more comfortable empowering that individual to pay greater attention in their own life and therefore be able to maximize their own functionality. And let's just leave it there for right now. Great question. We could go on for a long time about it. And, let's look for an opportunity, Maury, to talk about this again sometime.
I definitely will, and I thank you for that answer.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And just to add my two cents, if you don't mind, I would say that perhaps if you do some energy healing on the person you're talking about, and then they go to surgery, well, the surgeon may actually find that there is no tumor to operate any longer. I mean, they will probably still cut the person to look inside. But I think that would be an excellent experience for a surgeon to have, if they actually get an idea that, yes, somebody did do some energy healing work and there is no tumor now to cut out. So I think that would be a great paradigm shift opportunity for the Western medical doctor as well.
And, you know, this is happening more all the time. We haven't really heard these stories much, but I'll just jump back in by telling a little brief story of one of the people who we're training currently as a Qigong and Tai Chi teacher, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and who basically learned some Qigong and Tai Chi and ended up basically recovering. And it's a big, long story about a drug trial, and there was a point at which they were going to kick this guy out of the drug trial because they figured that he had started taking his medications again, and actually he had not been taking his medications. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, his doctors are saying, well, we don't know what happened here, but we know that you had Parkinson's, and now, to an extent, we're not finding the same signs of that. And so we're scheduled as a society to have a lot of these kinds of experiences, and it's a really, really exciting time.
Absolutely.
Right. It's interesting because, yes, I've seen and I've heard from people that have been worked on where I've worked on them, where they then had surgery, or in cases where it's totally disappeared, like if it's on the surface kind of thing. So I know that this kind of work is can be, to different levels, very effective. But I guess the concern of is there a potential negative, which, you know, I guess this isn't something I've ever even thought about before. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I guess there's not really an answer yet. But
how could it possibly be a negative? If a person's getting better, it's not a negative. It's just new territory that is distressing to the parties who don't understand what's happening.
Got it. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Maury, for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we also have another caller, I guess, also from Santa Barbara area, area code 805. Seems like also wanted to ask a question. And you're welcome to join us. You are on air.
Well, I'm calling in from area code 805.
Great.
Hi, thank you, Lama Tantrapa. This is Rhonda Ritchie. I actually work with Roger. And a question I thought of that I thought I've always wanted to know this is, how has Dr. Yonka's, or how has your practice changed over your years of practice?
You mean the Qigong practice?
Your Qigong or Tai Chi practice. I mean, what kinds of sometimes for myself, I feel like my practice has gotten simpler. How has your practice changed over, because you've got decades of practice.
Yes. Well, yeah, thanks, Rhonda. Wishing you well. The couple of things that happened over time is, number one, my grandma said, practice makes perfect. And I don't know if practice makes perfect, but what I do know for sure is that practice generates the capacity for continuous improvement and constant change. And one of the things that I'm very clear about is that almost every person that I've learned from, I have departed from them as a teacher. And one of the things that, in other words, I as a student have not felt that comfortable continuing with them as a teacher, because often what's happening is that people are teaching the same things over and over again. And one of the things that we've learned, me personally in my own practice, but then that we teach our teacher trainees to keep in mind, is that the average individual is extremely creative. And so if I were to demonstrate my Tai Chi to one of my favorite Tai Chi teachers, he would have a fit. Because of the fact that I have changed it constantly. And I love Chen Tai Chi. And so I have taken my personal Tai Chi practice, which has been with many different teachers. My favorite teacher is Daniel Wang in the Bay Area, W-E-N-G. And Daniel Wang teaches Chang, C-H-A-N-G, Tai Chi, which is from this incredible character called the Leaping Butterfly Master. And so I learned Leaping Butterfly Master, Chang Tai Chi, and I know that Daniel would say, my gosh, what have you done to the practice that I taught you? But every time he went to Taiwan to learn from what he called the old man, the Leaping Butterfly Master, the master would have changed it. And so the thing that I feel the most comfortable saying about my practice is that it never stops changing. And I care a lot less about the, quote, form and a whole lot more about what I call the principles, the baseline principles of lengthening, opening, relaxing, sinking, expanding, drifting, focusing on what we call the Tai Chi pull, and using the weight shift and leading from the center, and all of those beautiful principles are really what my practice is based on. And then because I love the Chen style so much, I've just absorbed all kinds of Chen-type influences. And then with the Qigong, having studied so many kinds of Qigong, been to China so many times, when we began to teach teachers, we developed what we call integral Qigong and integral Tai Chi. And integral Qigong and Tai Chi are basically forms of Qigong that are based on principle, not on lineages, not on particular family forms or any one particular master or even family or even temple or any kind of particular lineage that you have to kind of stick to. Integral means drawing on everything, body, mind, spirit, there's all the different great traditional bodies of knowledge, the Shaolin body, the Wudang body, the original Taoists, the celestial masters, the latter-day Taoists, the complete reality or the perfect reality school, Buddhism, the gorgeous social and virtue components of Confucianism, all of those, drawing on all of that and then cooking that into something that a person can constantly be constantly tailoring to their own needs. So I'll say one more last little note on that, is that it seems a little contraindicated or contraintuitive to train people to go back to the public and teach them something like, there is no teacher, there is no form. But actually, at the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi, what we're doing is we're teaching our trainees to use forms and be a teacher, to in fact teach people that there are, and that the teacher, the greatest teacher, is within us. Mama, okay. Back to you.
Well, I can certainly resonate with this approach, and throughout the years as I've known you, Roger, I felt like a really great sense of appreciation of your plan on Tai Chi and Qigong, just because it is so close to my perception of what it needs to be. And despite the fact that I'm a holder of a lineage, my lineage also does not teach form. It also relies exclusively on the principles. So that is definitely something I can relate to. Now, when people come to study with you, what do you promise to them that they seek or that they wish to accomplish or they wish to experience as a result of this training?
Yeah. We teach in my classes, which I teach, you know, all around the United States and in other countries sometimes. We teach the basic promise is liberation from false assumptions. And so we don't teach particular, I mean, we use forms to be able to help people to access their natural, spiritual, eternal self. And so I guess the promise would be to support you in tapping into your deep, eternal, natural self with the idea of liberating the personality from the pain of false assumptions.
Fantastic. That is an excellent promise. I think that a lot of people would be able to benefit from that. Now, how do you,
I think so.
How would you manage to fulfill that promise?
I'm sorry, would you say that again?
Yes, how do you fulfill this promise?
Just simply, I'll give an example. You know, if somebody's going to drive a car, they haven't driven a car before, so you hand them the keys, you open the door and say, you know, here's where you sit, and there's where you're going to put the keys, and, you know, let's drive here in this parking lot for a while where there's no traffic, and we're going to keep this very, very simple. And if you want to have more exposure to nature, then here's where you push the button to lower the windows, and et cetera. In other words, the way we fill the promise is we start at the absolute simplistic basis. And what's awesome, and I mean, I am not in any way exaggerating, what is absolutely awesome is that the simple practices are more profound than all of the complex memorization of, you know, just the tons and tons of Qigong minutia. There's really only one doorway in to the freedom, that freedom from the trauma and pain of life and all of the negative side effects of the false assumptions that we have gathered upon us throughout our lives, and that is to make contact with the aspect of the self that cannot be harmed, and to make contact with the aspect of the self that never dies. And so in how we fulfill that promise is that we start with the absolute most simplistic approach to the practice of Qigong and Tai Chi, both of them, Qigong and Tai Chi, so that people can have the experience of being free for maybe even just a moment at a time from the complexity of the characterological life, and have the to touch and to be able to savor and to actually build a relationship with the aspect of the self that is invincible.
Fantastic. Now, if we look at the practice of Qigong in particular, what do people, what is it like to be a student?
Well, I mean, it really depends, like a million, on who the student is. So sometimes a person is experiencing desperation, and all they want to do is be, you know, tell me how to, you know, free myself from my body's disorders or my mind's disorders. Other people are very, very clear about the fact that this takes time, and they're very, very patient with themselves. Sometimes people are quite intellectual, and as a student, for them, it's about learning stuff. And other people are kind of understand it, that it's not about taking on new learning. It's much more about letting go of what has already been learned. That's creating a boundary between the current interpretation of the self and the potential much more comfortable natural self. So that's a question that's really could go. I mean, we could just talk a lot about this, but basically what I would say as a brief response is that the way to be a student is to be simple, focus on the very, very simple practices. If you get involved with teachers who are convincing you that a lot of keeping track of a lot of minutia and details, watch out, because it's very likely that it's just going to be a big pile of minutia and details. And to try to move towards the skill, developing the skill of paying attention to what's happening now. And so as the hand is passing the face in cloud hands, we're saying to ourselves, and now my hand is passing in front of my face. And in a poetic sort of way, I might think to myself, and that's like a beautiful cloud. And now my other hand is passing. And, oh, lately I haven't taken a deep breath, so now I'm taking a deep breath. And as I realize it, I haven't checked my posture lately, so I'm checking my posture now. So it's all happening now.
A lot of internal dialogue going on.
Well, unless you're advanced enough in the practice to be able to take a lot of internal dialogue down to nothing and be actually drifting into a deeper level of quiet. But, you know, in mindfulness, the process is to use attentiveness to the natural presence of the now as a way of getting into that state and then limiting that dialogue.
I see. Excellent. And when people study and become proficient enough, what would you say, let's say for your ideal student, what would be the determining moment when they feel that they're ready to offer Qigong to other people? Is it when you give them a diploma, or when they leave your school for good, or when?
Okay, yeah, I like that question a lot. It's at the moment that they trust the fact that even though they don't feel like they know enough, that they do know enough. So I can say that another way. We have people who come to our training courses who say, you know, I need to have a certification to be able to feel comfortable with this. After they've finished the class, it's like having a certification wasn't enough. They needed something else, like they need to find another teacher, or they need to read another book, or they need to practice for a while longer. But really what's happening is that there's a part of the character that's saying, our goal is actually not to teach people piles and piles and piles of data and philosophy and physiology and different kinds of body movements and methodologies for internal focus. Certainly those are all a part of the curriculum, but the key is to tap people into the part of themselves that feels like it can't be hurt. Because then the courage comes on, and the person who will in one moment say, I don't feel like I know enough, or I'm not proficient enough, will say, well, screw that. I know that there's people in my community that need this and want this, and I'm going to go out there and make as many mistakes as I have to get myself comfortable. And getting over that hump, getting over the wall of self-doubt, that's when I think it happens. And my prescription, by the way, to any student that's ever been in our courses and anybody that's listening on the phone right now, is that when the voice of self-doubt comes on, just say to yourself, you know, what am I doing? Am I here to prove that I have a lot of information, or am I here to inspire people about the possibilities in life? People in classes who are around teachers who are perfect are just going to become more and more nervous. It's actually a good thing when a teacher doesn't know everything. It's a good thing when a teacher makes mistakes. We're not talking about flying an airplane and trying to hit a landing field here. We're just talking about trying to bring some new knowledge and some new behaviors into people's lives. It doesn't require that much. And so I think that the big one is self-esteem.
And also, it sounds like from your description, finding that connection or discovering that part of yourself that cannot be hurt.
Correct.
Is what I would call being in the flow. Really
being
discovering that being in the flow of chi, feeling that there is a flow of chi, a universal flow of chi. And when you are in the flow, fighting against the flow of chi or fighting against you, if you are in the flow, would be one and the same thing.
Correct.
And fighting against the universe is kind of tough. So that's
why you're right. Well stated.
Now, how can people find out more about your training? It sounds like you offer a fair amount of courses. How can people learn more about it? Do you offer anything soon so that they can enroll in them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right there at the bottom of the page at the blog talk description of our time together today, there are three websites. And I'm going to say the names of those websites just so that people can find them. The first one is iiqtc.org. That's the short form for Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi.org. So you don't need all that. The only thing you need is iiqtc.org. And that is the website for our training and research institute. And I encourage people to take a peek at the calendar and also take a peek at the curriculum and so forth for the training courses. And then to really just get turned on, go to the research center. We have recently had an article that we've been working for quite a while with myself and a couple of colleagues that is now going to be has been accepted for publication at the American Journal of Health Promotion, which is a very prestigious journal. And basically it's a review of the randomized controlled trials for Tai Chi and Qigong. It's a gorgeous article, and it is so full of information. Now, at the bottom of that research page, there's an article there that I wrote that's basically a review of three articles about the concept of gene expression, the influence of Qigong on gene expression. Amazing. It's called 21st Century Breakthrough. So while you're there looking at the training material and so forth, definitely go to the research center and look into those couple of articles. Now, the other couple of websites, one is called Feel the Qi. Feel like reach out, touch, feel. First letter F like Frank. FeelTheQi.com. So the first one was iiqtc.org. Second one, feeltheqi.com. Third one is taichieasy.org. And that's taichieasy.org. And Tai Chi Easy is this amazing breakthrough that we've had around the whole subject of making Tai Chi easy and fun. And it's not just brief Tai Chi, it's any kind of Tai Chi. Tai Chi Easy actually uses what we call the Integral Tai Chi Teaching Method. And the Integral Tai Chi Teaching Method is, you know, I mean, I'm kind of blowing our horn here, but it's kind of like the way to be able to support people in learning Tai Chi and Qigong in a very, very easy, fun, accessible, deep context. So check those websites. And then the other thing that I would say is look on Amazon for a couple of books that I wrote. I've been very fortunate to have the mainstream publishers find my books relevant. And so the Healer Within is the first one, and the Healer Within is published by HarperCollins. And then the other one is called The Healing Promise of Qi, and that was published by McGraw-Hill, and that's Q-I-Qi, The Healing Promise of Qi. And if you buy both of those books on Amazon, by the way, they give you like this huge deal. It's amazing.
As a matter of fact, our listeners will go to our website, blogtalkradio.com/QigongMasters, and click on the interview with Dr. Roger Yonke and purchase this book right on that page.
There
so
you go.
The majority of the listeners of our show go to the page to listen to the interviews, and that's exactly where they can find the links to these books so they don't have to search for them anywhere. They're already there. And I'm just curious, how did you present, or perhaps your literary agent present the books that you wrote to those major traditional publishers, and so that they actually got excited about them? And they
Well, I'll keep this very brief. My first agent, whose name I will not mention, was not one bit of a help, and it was very, very distressing. And it turned out that a friend of mine knew somebody who worked in the mailroom at HarperCollins and said, you know, let me call my friend and see if he'd be willing to, you know, receive something that he would then hand to an acquisition editor. And so that's how it happened. I created the proposal, and I sent it to the mailroom with this guy's name on it. He scratched out his name and put his favorite editorial person's name on it, and basically threw it on the chart, put a little note with it, says, hey, take a look at this. And so I then had to go back to that agent who did nothing and pay 15% to have that person negotiate the deal, which I guess was okay. But the reason, I believe the reason why they actually liked this book was that it was Qigong stated in language that is understandable here in our society. And one of the things that we teach our trainees, the people that we're teaching as teachers and practice leaders, is to study very carefully how to communicate. As important as teaching people about Qigong theory, Chinese medical theory, traditional Qigong and Tai Chi practices and so forth, is to teach people to pay attention to who they're talking to. And so The Healer Within was written in such a way that it was targeted at teachers and social service people and preachers and ministers and rabbis and people in the military and first responders and nurses. And so I think that that was the secret on that one. And then to be able to then get to publish The Healing Promise of Qi, that I don't think that I really could have sold, or I don't think that that would have been a successful process if I hadn't had the first book, which was a much more of an entry-level conversation, which developed a positive relationship between myself and the publishers.
Mm-hmm. And do you work on any new material, a book, or anything else at this point in time?
Well, I promised my spouse that I would not write a book for a while because it's a very, very big deal. And when the deadline starts kicking in, one of the things that happens is that when you write a book, particularly for a publisher that's really going to watch every move you're making, that writing process becomes like alchemy. And in the cases of both my books, the original proposal was actually very, very simplistic compared to what was ultimately published. And each one of those, writing each one of those books was literally like being cooked in an alchemical laboratory, to the extent that both the Healer Within and the Healing Promise of Qi actually express a kind of concept that I personally would not have been able to articulate until after the book was written. It was so, writing the book itself became an act of incredible creativity. It was an amazing experience for me. But it's also very, very big, very demanding to create a project that is not just a rehearsal of the things we already know, but to actually have that be a penetration into the mystery. And I feel like I had that experience, and so I promised my wife that I wouldn't write a very a very big thought book for a while. And I'm always writing, you know. There's constantly writing. So we're you know, there's a body of work that's accumulating, and I'm not sure, you know, what the next publishing project will be.
Well, let me just ask you, if you don't mind. On the personal note for yourself, where do you envision yourself as a Qigong teacher, let's say, a year from today?
Let me give you a year, and then let me give you 5 years, because 5 years is my favorite one. In a year, I will be doing a lot of what I'm doing now. However, so many of our teacher training graduates are absolutely brilliant teachers, and I am I'm ready for the hermitage. In other words, I want to grow sunflowers. I'm a player of many musical instruments. I play the violin. I play the guitar. I play the oud, which is the Arabic guitar. I play the mandolin, a bunch of different kinds of drums, and I often play my flutes. I play the bansuri from India and the shakuhachi from Japan. So I'm really interested in personal cultivation. And you know, I'm a pretty busy person. I do a lot of lecturing and I do a lot of teaching. So I'm really looking forward in the next year to creating a context through which the best of the graduates of the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi to begin to take over the work that I do, and that within two or 3 years, I'm traveling less and making more personal elixir, doing more of my own internal alchemy, and playing music and growing vegetables. I was talking to my wife just the other day of let's just make a garden out of our whole yard. You know, right now we've got a little lawn here and a little lawn there. Just take the whole lawn up, and then let's grow herbs and Chinese herbs and, you know, all these different kinds of varieties of non-genetically modified seeds into a gorgeous garden. So in 5 years, I'm hoping that I'm actually supervising, encouraging, and nourishing the graduates of our program, and basically taking over the institute.
Great. So you're thinking of kind of semi-retirement or something?
Well, absolutely semi. I mean, you know, retirement. You know, that's such a funny little word that we use. But certainly relative to the level of engaged professional activity, I would say I would call it to step back from that and call on my colleagues. Remember, I was saying, when people say, will you be my teacher? I say, you know, no, I am interested in being your colleague. And I can, you know, support you in becoming a teacher yourself. And then we can be in a lifetime relationship as equals, as colleagues. Because I really don't believe in masters. I don't believe in lineages. I mean, I know that they're out there, and I believe that they exist, but in terms of my own, I feel much more like a kind of a Jeffersonian, Democratic chi cultivation is called for in the 21st century, and I'm interested in being a radical, enthusiastic, very, very encouraging voice in that amazing cultural transformation.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I think that your voice has been extremely encouraging and enthusiastic already, and I think hundreds of people who became introduced, perhaps thousands of people who got introduced to the energy arts as a result of studying with you or just reading your books, benefited tremendously from that. And so just to wrap up our discussion today, let me ask you my favorite question that I ask pretty much everybody who is a guest on our show. What is your personal secret that allows you to be successful and effective in your work and in the energy art?
Yeah, you know, that's the kind of question where you have to take a deep breath and reflect for a moment. And I think a couple of things. One is that I'm a pretty disciplined person. Discipline is a word that typically average people say, yikes, discipline, you know, free me from discipline. I think I learned that discipline. I think it's a kind of a genetic thing, but I also think I learned about it from really, really profound family members. As a younger person, I was extremely blessed. I mean, I wouldn't say that I come from a wealthy family or anything like that, but I lived in a rural environment where I was encouraged to spend a lot of time in nature. My parents weren't nervous about me, you know, going into the woods, and so I did that. And I had a grandmother who was a wise and very deep and spiritual person. She was really kind of like a peasant in terms of her, you know, the size of her house. She never owned a car, but she was just a deep, deep well of amazing love and an exposure to spirituality. And so, in a way, I feel like the gifts that were granted to me by my destiny, my dharma, my karma, were really, really, really important baseline for me. And then on top of that, I'm a renegade, so I'm not very comfortable going to school. Like, I didn't really do well in any kind of school, and it never really mattered. I mean, I guess it mattered that I got through those schools, but I was never really very focused in the kind of usual learning sort of way, and so I had a kind of a slow start as a professional and as a mature adult, and I really grew into a kind of fairly disciplined person. And of course, you know, the people that I work with and my spouse and my kids would tell you that I'm not very disciplined because I don't follow rules very well. And but in terms of, you know, playing a lot of musical instruments, I've never studied music. I don't know how to read music, but I'm really willing to make a fool of myself. I do a lot of, there's a secret for you. I'm willing to fool around. I'm willing to be perceived as someone who doesn't really do something very well. And so I'm willing to do something not very well for a really long time until just over time it refines. So fooling around has been being willing to be a fool or not know all the details and just kind of leaping in enthusiastically anyway. I think that's a great secret that's worked well for me.
Fantastic. Well, this is really a great secret indeed. Not being self-conscious and self-important to actually be okay with not knowing and accepting that perhaps it's still be all right.
Thank you. I think you're right.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Roger, for appearing on our show. And I want to give our listeners fair notice that we're going to have another interview with Dr. Roger Yonke once again on our blog talk radio called The Secrets of Qigong Masters on February 22nd. Of the year 2010. He graciously accepted my invitation to give two interviews. Today, the one that we just listened to was dedicated to the general ideas of what Qigong and Tai Chi have to offer. And on February 22nd, we'll go deeper into the understanding of how these energy arts can work for the American society and what they can bring forth in terms of implementation and impending healthcare reform and so on and so forth. I really look forward to that discussion as well.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, part of what we'll do there is we'll go, like, Qigong as wellness, Qigong and Tai Chi as wellness, you know, for the kind of the mainstream approach to things. We'll talk a little bit about the research, the gorgeous research that's just pouring in. And then if we have time, maybe we'll talk a little bit about medical Qigong or clinical energetics and how that's going to impact the healthcare system all the way from the personal cultivation side as these practices as health promotion and wellness all the way through to some of the stuff around, you know, what are the implications of chi emission and chi transmission and so forth.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I once again want to express my appreciation for the time that you shared and the wisdom that you've transmitted tonight, and wish you all the best in your endeavors, and I'll look forward to speaking to you again on February 22nd of next year.
Thank you, sir. This has been a lot of fun, and to everybody out there in listener land, what a pleasure to meet you in the way that we have, and I hope you'll come around to our websites, and you can sign on for our, we have, you know, let us know what you're interested in. If you put your email address in there, and it'll ask you, you know, what are you interested in, and we'll try to support you with knowledge, information, inspiration, and so forth. And thank you, Lama Tantrapa. I wish you every blessing.
All right. Thank you very much. Good night, everyone. This has been a pleasure to have you. This is the radio talk show, The Secrets of Qigong Masters, sponsored by Academy of Qigao. This is the first and only school in the world offering a professional training in Qigong coaching.